All right, let's get started this morning. Going to get some verses out. Our main passage is Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12. And Ayel, if you'll get that for us, Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12. Caleb Sawyer, if you'll get Genesis 2, 18. Chris Lee, if you'll get Proverbs 18, 22. Lem, if you'll get for us Proverbs 31 and verse 10. Brian, if you'll get Luke 10 and verse 1. Tony, if you'll get Mark 3, 25. And then Ayel, if you'll keep that and read it, we'll have you read Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12 at the end again. Okay. One of the best pieces of advice that I was given when I became concert director, now talking over 13 years ago, was protect your marriage. That was the nugget of advice. Protect your marriage. When we were out pastoring, something my wife and I would ask seasoned ministers, you know, they've been in the ministry for a length of time, some of them in ministry so long that they already had adult children, some of those adult children married, etc. But we would ask them, what would you do differently all these years later? And a common response was, I would invest more into my home, more into my wife, more into my children. So just that as a launching point, we know and many of us have heard and recognized, Pastor Greg often speaks of his marriage relationship. And when he refers to past ministry, he uses the word we, what we have done. Lisa and I, you know, in his words would say that. So this has set an example and a course for my wife and I when it comes to marriage and ministry. And in the passage we're going to look at this morning, the wisdom of the text is most often applied to couples and this idea that two are better than one. So let's look at this, Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12.
Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one fails, the other can reach out and help, but someone who fails alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm, but how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but one can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken.
Okay, I want to look at protecting your marriage. Let's talk firstly about the need for another. Every single person, they need relationships in life. This is true for everyone. We all have a need to be loved and a need to love. God has put that in place. That's true overall. But then when it comes to this idea of marriage, we all need our spouse. Let's look at Genesis 2 and verse 18.
The Lord God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him.
Okay, here is God looking down upon his creation, and God sees the need for a spouse, a companion. Because why? It is not good for the man to be alone. So from the beginning of creation, God speaks to the need for another. And this would still be true today. People haven't changed. God hasn't changed. This truth has not changed. It's Jimmy Evans, a credible Christian marriage counselor of 40 plus years, has repeated this quote, if you could meet all of your own needs, you would have never gotten married. But you couldn't meet all your own needs. That's why you got married. So we need our spouse. We have a need, every person, for another. In our passage, our main verse, verse 9 says, two are better than one. This is better for life. This is better for you. This is a good thing, and marriage is a blessed plan from God. This is a blessed plan for your life. Two are better than one. This is the blessed plan for ministry. Two are better than one. Let's read Proverbs 18:22.
The man who finds a wife finds a treasure.
Okay, here's wisdom now in the context of a marriage relationship. When a man finds a wife, he finds a treasure. That sets a understanding for marriage, how we view our spouse. That sets a precedent and standard on our approach to marriage. If you find a wife, you find a girl that is willing to spend the rest of her life with you, you've found a treasure, if you really know you, right? And so this is such a treasure for us. And you look throughout Bible history. Abraham had his Sarah. Noah had his wife. Moses had Zipporah. Peter, the Bible tells us, he had a mother-in-law, so apparently had his wife. You see this throughout Bible history and many, many more that we could name and highlight because it's a treasure. It is a good thing. We could look back on our own history here in our fellowship. Pastor Wayman Mitchell had his Nelda, and their gravestones with their names there say together, they blessed the world. They did this together. And so this is a blessed plan from God. Let's read Proverbs 31 and verse 10.
Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above the rubies.
Her worth is far above the rubies. Again, this idea of treasure, its value, it is worth. So, marriage is meant to be a blessing. You're supposed to. The plan of God, the design of God when it comes to marriage, it's intended to be a blessing to you. And you are intended to be a blessing to your spouse. And it's intended to get better. My wife and I, we got married very young. I was 18 years old when we got married. My wife was 19 years old. And I remember sitting with Pastor Wayman Mitchell. We both went in some premarital counseling, just going over different things. And he asked us our age, you know, and I felt like I was on top of the world and knew everything. But when he asked me in that moment, I felt very insignificant. And I'm 18, you know, and so, but his response, I'll never forget, he said, great, you will grow up together. And I can tell you that my wife and I, we have grown up together, and we have grown together. Two are better than one. It is the best thing, absolutely has been a blessing. And you know what? It has gotten better and better and better as the years have progressed. So let's look secondly then at protecting your marriage. So what does protecting your marriage look like? That's what we need to recognize and understand. If two are better than one and it's supposed to be a blessing and it's supposed to be getting better and better and you know, all the blessings that it talks about, that doesn't just happen. It's not automatic. Right? It doesn't work. Woman, respect. If you have to say it and ask for it, it's not going to happen because there's things that are missing. So how do you protect and reach that point? Number one is investment. Part of protecting your marriage means you're going to make investments into it. So we need to make deposits into our spouse. Deposits of time. When we make time for our spouse, we send them the message that they are a priority in our lives. I've heard Pastor Greg say a quote along these lines, ministry isn't my mistress. In other words, it's not what pulls my attention. It's not what pulls my affection. It's not what pulls on my priority. No, no, no. That makes it backwards. If ministry is above your wife, that's out of order. It should go the priorities of life, God, then your wife, then your children. Then you can fill it however you want after that. But this is very important. So the priority of time and the investment of time sends her the message, she is a treasure. Sends her the message, she is worth more than rubies, and that investment will pay dividends. The second way we can make an investment and protect our marriage is through our words. How do you communicate to your wife? What is the overall tone of how you speak to her, of how you listen to her? What is your body language? Right? These are different things that as you, with your words and receiving her words, you're making an investment. We must then, on top of that, communicate, husbands, words of love. Are you sending those messages, words of affection, words of appreciation towards our spouse? And sometimes we think, you know, you haven't said a nice thing in years, and now on Valentine's Day, I got you a card and you didn't even sign it, right? No, she needs to be hearing that on the regular, or only on her birthday, or only at Mother's Day, or, you know, fill in the blank. This should be often. This should be daily, where you are making deposits. And it's in the little things. You know, in the book, The Gratitude Diaries, talked about the familiarity and lack of gratitude when we get too familiar with people. And that plays out the most in marriage. We will be more grateful and thankful to the random attendant at the checkout counter. We'll be more gratuitous and voice our gratitude to the server at the restaurant than we do to our wife, right? I mean, little things. Dinner. Thank you for that meal. That was excellent. She washes your clothes. I tell my wife often, thank you for washing my clothes. I have clean clothes because of you. Little things, you're expressing gratitude, and it's these small investments that pay big dividends, right? They're an investment of our words. But too often, people get caught up in the complaints and the frustrations in ministry, in discipleship, in, you know, pastoral ministry later. And so here you've got to be conscious of your words and your tone and how you're communicating. Now, this isn't always done perfect. Again, we can get caught up in life and stress. And there have been times my wife, because we have a good relationship of words and communication, has vocalized, hang on, I'm not the problem. I'm not the one that's been speaking against you. I'm not the one that is causing your frustration, right? But that's a good, healthy relationship that she can even vocalize that, and I can hear, I need to change my tone. I need to change my attitude. I need to change my body language. I need to compartmentalize some of these other things that she has nothing to do with and put them away, right? That is very important. Then we make investment and protect our marriage with valuable things. For some wives, that is gifts. For other wives, that is cards and words. For other wives, that is physical affection. For other wives, that is quality time. But whatever those valuable things are, it is where we give our best from our best. Our wife can't get our leftovers or the scraps of our affection and attention. She should get our best from our best. And too often, you see couples, they drift apart over time. He has his schedule, she has hers. She has her hobbies, he has his. He has his friends and circles, and she has hers. And it's this drift that happens, and you have couples, we just don't have anything in common anymore. No, that was a choice. That was a decision. That was a lack of investment. So let's look secondly then in this protecting your marriage. What else does this look like? It looks like spiritual partnership. This is the understanding and recognition that we have been sent out together, or we are going to be sent out together, right? We never say into such and such city and just name the husband because she's not going. No, we announce couples. We send them together. Luke 10 in verse 1.
The Lord now chose 72 other disciples and sent them ahead in pairs to all the towns and places he planned to visit.
Sent them ahead in pairs or two by two. And Pastor Greg addressed this idea in memorial stones. What does that mean? What does that look like? And that's why we send couples through trial and error, through trying a variety of ways of launching churches and sending couples. Now we recognize two by two, a pair, we send couples. So in this spiritual partnership, it's establishing the understanding that we are doing this together. It's not just my calling and you got to come with me whether you like it or not. No, like I said, it's our calling. And I learned that from my pastor. When we were in Tasmania, when we were in South Africa, I would hear that. This is together. We are a partnership in this. As I mentioned and referenced Pastor Wayman Mitchell and Nelda at their gravestone, they blessed the world. It was together. So every season and chapter for my wife and I has been done together in many ways, laboring together, praying together, following up together, evangelizing together, being involved in ministry and special events together. And so here, this is what you're doing. You're sending that message that this is a spiritual partnership. Now, I want to caution you that you need to use wisdom. For every couple represented, right? You as the husband and your wife, for every couple represented, you keep your wife involved to her limits. Okay, so I can share with you 100 things my wife and I have done together in ministry. But you know what? That's not what everyone should be doing. Because that's not what everyone can do, right? We had 2 children. I like to use Pastor Nate Rush as an example. My wife and I had 2 children. They, right at the current moment, have 6 children under the age of 10, 2 of them being pairs of twins. I can't even imagine what that is like. I mean, that is a lot of stinking work just in the hair alone. So, you know what? How their experience in Santa Fe is looking is going to be very different than our experience in Santa Fe when it comes to marriage, when it comes to family, when it comes to ministry in the home. So you have to identify and recognize how to have your wife involved with you in this spiritual partnership, but at her level, at her limits. You want to know a good way to die? Is compare her to other women. Yeah, so you can't do that. Yeah, but so-and-so's wife, but I've heard, you know, pastors, and I've heard, and it's all these comparisons, and then she's feeling the pressure, and then she's feeling overwhelmed, and I have to be like, and I have to do, and how do they do this? And, well, but it's different. So you've got to know your home. You have to lead with understanding. You need to know what your wife can handle. At the end of the day, she is facilitating your calling. She's your biggest support. She's your biggest fan. But she tends to the home, and if you have kids, to the kids. And those are her place. Those are her roles. Those are her calling. Anything extra on top of that, I'm grateful for. Anything extra on top of that is a plus. It's a bonus. It's a blessing. And so think of Jacob when he's reunited with his brother Esau. And Esau says, let's go, man. Let's celebrate. And Jacob, with wisdom, says, Esau, you go ahead. We will follow you because I have family. I have children. We're going to move at a slower pace, but we're going to get there. And we'll celebrate when we get there. In other words, he knew his home. He knew the state of his flock and what was appropriate for his family. But that only reinforces and helps the spiritual partnership mindset. We're in this together, and I, as the head of house, I'm going to work and lead with you so you can participate and be part of what we are doing at your limits. Okay, then finally, the way we protect our marriage is through covering. This is now protection through defense. This, of course, can be, number one, spiritual. The Bible tells us that the husband is the head of the house, and there's spiritual application to that. The Bible says that hell assaults the weaker vessel, the wife. She's going to be more prone to attacks. She's going to be more prone to emotional responses in hardships and difficulties. And so you need to become a covering for her, right? And in ministry especially, this can be with people. My wife's default response and what has helped her and blessed her and she knows will protect her is speak to my husband. Things get to a certain point. She knows when to say, you know what? That sounds like a conversation for Pastor. You should speak to my husband. You should go talk to Jesse. Because she knows I don't have to fix people. That's not my job. In the spiritual partnership, that's not my role. My role is not counseling. My role is not to take people by the hand and try to lead them to wherever they need to get to. My job, that's not my role and responsibility. So part of that comes to covering. She knows she's covered and protected. And she can send people in that direction. Covering can be through listening. You listening to your spouse. You know, sometimes there's going to be hard conversations or maybe just times where she needs to vent that she won't be able to vent to just anyone. Especially in ministry. There is a very narrow pool of people, if at all, that a wife can be honest and genuine with. You are that ear. You are that person to listen and hear them out because they cannot always be heard to just anyone. It would cause damage. It would cause drama. It would cause friction, right? So you need to be that someone they can relate anything to. Right? And again, I've not always done this perfect. And so there have been times my wife has needed to express or get something off her chest. And in my response or in my listening, she goes, okay, so where should I take this? Where can I take this? And there have been times, obviously, my wife has a good relationship with her pastor, Pastor Greg. But there are some just little conversations that need to be had that she can express and vent. And it's true, yes. That means then we need to be approachable. Are you approachable to your wife? And again, you might not start off well. You know what? You're right. Let's start that over. I'm going to be your listening ear. I'm going to be the friend that you need right now. I'm going to be that covering where you can vent some of this stuff and we can pray together and be able to move forward and let some things heal. What that produces is security. After the love need, right? A wife's greatest need is to be loved. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Okay, that is primary goal. When she feels loved, the second greatest need is security. When she feels loved, that means she has security. And I'm telling you, when your wife has security, That changes everything. You can be going through hell, but she knows she's loved, and she knows she has security, that you are her covering, and she's going to be fine. She's going to be able to manage and handle things, but that comes from you. Right? You can't tell your wife, you know what, you just have to suck it up. You know what, just ignore it. Right? So you can do that, she can't. So you're going to have to help her by these things we're talking about. So the question, gentlemen, are you protecting your marriage? Well, maybe not, but you can start. It's natural for people to drift. And couples especially, if they're not intentional, they can drift and your spouse feel disconnected from you. I want to tell you, that is what hell wants. Mark 3:25.
And a family that is divided cannot continue.
A family that is not divided cannot continue, or if a house is divided against itself, it cannot stand. There's going to be some things that really break down. There's going to be some ministries that break down. There's going to be, you're right, this really matters. And hell wants to bring a separation. Hell wants to bring division. Hell wants to bring that isolation. If it's divided, it cannot stand. But you can unify your home when you protect your marriage through investment, spiritual partnership, and covering. And when your wife knows that she is needed, that she is wanted, and that she is valued by you, doesn't matter if she feels needed outside of the home. Doesn't matter if she feels wanted outside of the home. Doesn't matter if she feels valued outside of the home. What she really wants is those from you. And if you can begin to make that investment, you will protect your marriage and by default, protect your ministry. So let's close. Let's talk about the blessing of two. So our passage speaks about the blessing of two. And I know, IL, I asked you to hold that scripture, but I'm going to read it from the New King James Version. Ecclesiastes 4:9-12 says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. How can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. So there's a number of blessings that this highlights when there are two. The first is our labors are maximized. Together, you can accomplish more than you could ever accomplish alone. You know, sometimes in the pressure of life and in the sometimes the schedules, you know, my wife will say, would you be able to help me go to the store and get some things? Absolutely. Yeah, let's do this. So we go and then she'll say, do you want to divide and conquer? Right? We can maximize our time. She goes on one end of the store. I go on the other end of the store and we're going to regroup at aisle five, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. We divide and conquer. Two are better than one. We maximize our time, right? Can navigate and get things done. That is a one little example, but that plays out in so many different arenas. That together, you can do more than just by yourself. Secondly, is you can uplift one another. Right? It says, for if they fall, one will lift up his companion. When you have a good marriage and you have been making good deposits, then when you are discouraged, your wife can encourage you. Or when she is discouraged, you will encourage her. When you are feeling inadequate, she can pump up your ego and pride and say, no, you are doing awesome. God has called you here. He's going to help you. No, I'm telling you, you have what it takes. No, you're navigating this very well. Man, my wife has helped. I'm where I am because of her encouragement. But that is the result of investment. That is the result. When I feel so inadequate, she makes me feel adequate. And vice versa. It should go both ways. When times when you are dealing with words of assault, words of rejection from people, or words of rebellion, there's all kinds of things that can be swirling. But your wife can uplift you, and you can uplift her. The point is, you have one with you. At least that's how it should be. You know, it'd be terrible if people are saying, "Pastor sucks," and she says, "I agree." Right? That would be terrible. No, is she can help you and uplift you. Then there's companionship. It says here, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? This is that companionship. And in companionship, the blessing of it is there's the warmth of love. There's the warmth of intimate affection. There's the warmth of grace, the warmth of encouragement. There's that companionship. Then there's strength. It says here, if the one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand. So there's strength together. And this strong bond enables you to face the troubles of ministry together, to celebrate and rejoice the victories of ministry together. Right? When there's a victory in ministry, it's not like I'm excited and my wife's like, "Oh, that's great. I had nothing to do with it." You know, it feels like they can't rejoice. No, my wife, not we prayed for that. We contended for that. And there is strength together. So two are better than one. The greatest blessing then is the hand of God on your lives, the threefold cord. So you all, every gentleman here, can have that kind of blessing. You can have that kind of marriage, be a helper to another, and have a partnership that is strong in Christ. Okay, let's open it up for some questions on protecting your marriage. Yeah, I have.
Pastor Jesse, well, you mentioned you probably have not done it right, but over time, what are some of the ways to help you to become a good listener in those moments of not to find a solution, or when your wife is venting, or
yeah,
what is the mindset like? Do you pray for that, or?
Well, sometimes, yes, you can pray. Number one, God help me to be a good listener. When we say, "Give me a love for people and a passion for souls," if God gives you that, that's definitely going to benefit your wife, right? Because you love her and you have a passion for her. God can give you that. So that's number one. Number two is, when you are developing the skill of listening, then do just that. Listen, right? And sometimes there's venting happening and you come in with solution and it gets worse, right? Sometimes if you're just listening and wait for hearing what she wants. There have been times when my wife knows what she wants. Sometimes our wives don't, right? It's just there's a lot going on. But, you know, when you learn communication and you are helping each other in that, there have been times my wife can just say, "I just need to vent." And okay, let's see, right? Now there's limits and boundaries. Okay, we're stopping there, right? All right, that's as far as we go there, right? Because there is a limit where it can become damaging, okay? So you learn that. But sometimes my wife can just say, "I need to vent." So what did I just hear? I don't need a solution. I need to listen, right? Or talking, working things out, "This is frustrating, da da da." And then she'll say, "What do you think?" Or sometimes my wife will lead with, "I want to ask you a question." Okay, yeah. So I know now she's expecting an answer, right? So all of those, when you learn how to listen, and when you're learning how to communicate with each other, you'll develop the ability to know what you want and be able to communicate and hear what is being expected or asked. And so that's why listening is important. Yep. Good. Yep, Tony.
How do you provide a covering for your wife besides prayer?
Well, in the ways we discussed. So protection is ultimately that idea of covering. So when you are making investments and she feels loved and secure, there's protection in that, Tony, right? When a wife cannot handle and manage, and again, please understand, this isn't robotic. You know, some of these statements, and I'm being more conscious about them, they're not done perfect. Nothing in life is perfect, okay? But she'll be able to manage and handle a lot more criticism, rejection, fill in the blank, things along those lines, when she knows she is secure and loved by you. That changes so much. Because whether you realize it or not, by making those investments of time and words and valuable things, and you're reinforcing that, all these things can be swirling, but there's a stability and a grounding there. So, and that's a covering. It's a form of covering. Spiritual partnership. We're in this together. But there are times, I mean, just even yesterday, just in just working through things, I said twice yesterday, let's pray. Let's pray. God, right now, I'm asking. That's spiritual partnership, and that's covering, right? And praying for her right then and there, laying hands on her and praying for her, right? And so that goes beyond just in your prayer hour or prayer time with God. You're doing things in the moment. You're helping in the moment. Covering with children, right? There are times we have had conversations about our kids and we've strategized together. That brings a form of covering on her and on the home. So we're strategizing and working things out together. What does this look like? What is our team, her and I, what are we going to do? How are we going to fix this? How are we going to change that? All of that produces covering. There's a protection over her life, but it comes from you. Yeah, good. Micah.
My question is kind of similar to Tony's, but in being a covering, if a wife is trying or feels she needs to take on something that's not her role, how do you help her to see that work correctly?
Yeah. Oftentimes, that can look a lot of different ways, Micah, but it does have to be communicated. And so, taking on a role that she shouldn't or whatever, it's often going to happen in mistakes. You're going to recognize it, right? So, I talked to so-and-so and da-da-da, and then I said, and that didn't work out. It caused more problems, right? So, yeah, I think in the future, you could say, you know what? Talk to my husband. Know when it gets to that point. Know when it gets to that level. Or there have just been times where my wife has, maybe I've asked her to help with something or get on board with something or whatever in life, in ministry, etc. And then her say, I just don't think I can really do that right now. I just, or whatever that looks, she can communicate. And instead of you forcing her to step into that, right, you're hearing and respecting and saying, you know what, you're right. Actually, yeah, you don't have to do that, right? So, and then it depends on personality. There are some, and I have met them, there are some wives that they just have to have their hand in everything. And that husband has allowed that. You get down the road in life and it's just not helpful, but you have allowed it. So you've got to know your wife's personality. She's a little more headstrong, a little more forward, a little more. You're going to have to find ways and pray, God, you got to help me stay strong. That's what happens. You say no, but her no is no, and you submit to it. Right? So you got to know her personality. Some wives will just say, take the no and say, okay, I can do that. Other wives will say, well, why not? I can, and so you got to learn your wife. Yep. You got to learn your wife and know her strengths and maybe weaknesses, etc. Yep. Good. Yeah, Matt.
You talked about listening to your wife venting when she's going through things. Now, how do you learn when it's okay or what's okay or how to communicate things that you're going through and how have you learned like either her limits or how have you learned what is some things that you can share, because obviously she can identify when you're going through stuff.
Yeah.
Versus giving her the broad strokes or actually venting. How do you know the wisdom in that?
Again, you've got to know your wife. So at the end of the day, the umbrella statement is you can compartmentalize and handle more than she can. That's just normal in the normal course. Now, I get it. We live in a very different generation and emotion looks very different today in a lot of different ways. But at the end of the day, overall, you can handle more than she can. So just knowing that alone, you're going to naturally refrain from venting certain things or releasing certain information, right? You know and learn. And then again, sometimes, Matt, we just learn the hard way. I said something and then they repeated it for whatever reason, however that looks, and then you go, nope, that was a mistake. I need to learn from that. I need to remember that. And there's certain things that are more sensitive, sensitive to them than others. There's certain things you can relay or speak, and they can hold that. But then there's other things that just bother them a little more, and then they feel like they have to vent it. So you've got to learn your spouse. And oftentimes we'll learn that the hard way, right? But you pay attention to it. Number one, you need to secondly remember and recount and create a template. Okay, this is what she can handle, and I'm very aware of that. Then, you know, I know it's not exactly what you're asking, but I feel that it fits, is when she is venting to you, you've got to know when enough is enough. When, okay, that's as far as that goes. And how do you know that? Sometimes I know that when I start wanting to rise up, right? She's recounting or telling something, and I'm like, what? I'm going to go slap that person, you know? And it just, there's a lot going on. So, okay, no, we're stopping there. Because now we're both getting riled up, and that is not healthy, right? Because this person could change. This person could turn a chapter, and are we together now? Did we fuel a fire that now we can't put out when they want to get things right? So when I feel myself wanting to rise up, okay, all right, that's enough. We're stopping there. Let's pray. We need God to help us, right? And you can tone, bring the volume down, bring the temperature down. So you got to learn it, though. Which is why you've got to get to know your wife, right? And there's so many ways that you can do that. It's not complicated. We make it complicated. We feel like it's going to take time we don't have, but it's in the little things. It's in the little things. So, yeah, good question. Yes, Brian.
Right now, as a disciple in the church, yeah, when you're in a ministry or thing or whatever, how do you bring wife along? Like, what does it look like to bring your wife along with you in those?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it varies. It varies on the band. It varies on her. It varies on so many different things. I often invite my wife to participate with things I'm involved with. You know, I'll say, you know, help me write some lyrics for a song, or, you know, we do a lot of things together. Again, that's our marriage relationship. We just have a lot of bridges in common, and some of those common bridges have been her just trying to support and help me. The reason why my wife is such an incredible special effects makeup artist is because she wanted to help me with visions and haunted houses we used to write before. So she put herself to build a bridge with me to be able to work alongside me, right? And then there's other things that I have got involved with. You know, when we did the Super Fairy Tale, our house in New York looked like a Chinese sweatshop. We had all these dresses hanging, and I'm helping her troubleshoot sewing, and we've done that for years, and that was one of the biggest projects, but for years I've helped her with sewing projects. I can see things, and we can strategize together. I don't know a whole lot about sewing, but I can see things, like geometrically, I can envision it and help give her some strategy, but we're doing that together, right? So different ways that we're helping each other in our interests, in our hobbies, etc. And so that looks just a lot of different ways. Sometimes it's just coming and sitting alongside me, you know? You know, a great example is kind of like what happened Thursday, right? You came early, but then your family came and joined you. They're there with you. And sometimes I find ways to involve them in that. How does it sound? What do you think it needs? You know, different things like that, where you're getting their participation and their critique, right? You got to be able to handle it, though, if you're going to ask. How does it sound? Sounds like crap. Okay. Well, what do you mean? I know what I'm doing, right? So people can get real. You got to have a good relationship, right? And so, but that's how you build it. Right, so there's just a lot of different ways that looks, and like you're, I'm using you as an example with your question, but you know, Even pre-show, you've got Everett on your shoulders. You're at the soundboard. Hey, that's he's right there. I'm with Dad, and this is what we do. You're setting a foundation. We're here. We're working. We're laboring. My son, my daughter, they're involved today, but they've been involved since they were little. They sat at band practices in their diapers. They were part of it, right? And it's no wonder they're into it today. Because you say, this is normal. We do this together. Yep, good. And that's going to look different with each season. Yep.
So at my age, I'm 17 and everything. Yep. I don't have a wife.
Yes.
So I'm just curious, like, how do you prepare for, you know, the future and, you know, getting a wife and everything? And what do you suggest I pray for right now?
Yeah, very good question. What you want to look for is someone who has the spiritual hunger you have, someone who is in prayer, someone who is on outreach, someone who is involved in ministry and has a joy and passion for it, right? Someone who is who serves, not for themselves, but for the sake of others, right? A great story is when Abraham sends Eliezer to go find a wife for his son Isaac. That's a tall order, right? But if you read that story, there's a lot of practical things she was doing that made her a candidate for a good wife. As Pastor Greg say, beauty fades, mean is forever. And so, that you want to find a nice girl, right? Who's nice and compassionate, right? Someone who's a good listener. Someone who's vain and looking in the mirror all the time. Every time you're around them and they're only on the mirror or in their phone or posting their next social media, they're selfish. They're very self-focused, right? So you're looking for small things like that. But yes, you ask a very good question, because after salvation, marriage is the most important decision after salvation. And so you want to make sure you're choosing right. But those would be some things to look for. Yep. Good. Good, yes.
Going back to what Pastor Matt was talking about with, and you were saying knowing your wife and venting and things like that, you know, venting to you, but when you're venting to her maybe, or you're talking about things, are there things that you should never say to your wife?
Absolutely, yes.
What are some of those things?
Depends. It depends, and you got to know yourself, right? So, come on, brain. Jezebel's husband, Ahab. Yes, Ahab. He vented things he should not have, right? And that's what'll happen. You vent things you should not vent, your wife will go to bat for you, and that is not going to be helpful. That is not going to be good. And so you have to govern your emotions. There are certain things I can vent, and as Pastor Matt had asked. She doesn't need to know everything, but she does want to struggle with you. I know that's a funny way of saying it, but she wants to help carry the burden with you. So I have asked my wife, I just need you to pray. You know, in weird, navigating hard, weird seasons like rebellion, I have said, I am feeling the words being risen in judgment. I need you to just help me. And sometimes I know the words. Sometimes I know what has been said. It has come to me. But I'm not going to share that bit of information. But I can say, I'm just feeling the words and I'm sapped. My head is throbbing, right? It's just all these different things are swirling. But she can suffer with me and pray for me. Now if I say, so-and-so said and so-and-so said, and now they're telling me, and guess what? You're putting something into her that's rising up that she may not be able to handle if they get their heart right. They come back in, you're rejoicing, but you, what have you put into your wife? What have you been depositing? That's, so yes, good question, and revisiting that. But absolutely, you need to learn how to govern your emotions and recognize that will not help her.
So then if there's things that you can't say, like, and I know prayer, of course, talk to God about it and pour your heart out to God. Would you suggest, like, if a pastor in ministry, would you suggest another pastor to talk to, or maybe?
Well, yeah, I always talk to my pastor. Yeah, okay. I vent things to my pastor often. Okay. Yeah, and let him know where I'm at. And we have prayed together in the office multiple times because I need God, right? But I also know my wife wants to be a support too. And so that's why I said is I can say things without saying things. I can communicate to a degree without giving every single dirty detail, right? So it's just wisdom, right? And using discernment. And you know what? There have been things maybe I said, you know, in the course of ministry, and I've gone back and I've said, I'm sorry, I should not have vocalized that. That was not okay. But right there, when you're fixing that, you're mending that, and now there's going to be a lock on that, right? You're going to fix that. So, yeah, all different ways that can look. Good. Good. Yep.
Can you go more into detail about how you'd fix one of those problems? Like you already made a mistake and you're trying to correct it.
Yeah, again, one would be apologizing. You know, I shouldn't have said that. That was too much. Other times is, your life gives you feedback. So if you are attentive to the feedback, you vocalize something and then it kind of circles back at you. Oh, okay, I should not have done that. Sometimes you can't fix it, right? It would not be helpful to say, I told you that, but why did you go tell everybody? Right? You shouldn't have said it in the first place. So I can form a template. Right, in any kind of word processing system, you can create a template to where when you open a page, it's exactly what you're needing, the fonts, the size, the layout of the paper, etc. Right, that's a template. So in life, you have templates. So in the template of rebellion, there's certain things I'm going to refrain from. In the template of immorality and judging immorality, there's things I'm not going to touch. Right, it's obvious. Okay, yeah. There was an immoral failure there. But that's as far as it goes. They don't need to know any other detail. And that's as far as anyone needs to know. Right? But if you say, they had an immoral failure. They did. And then they did this. And then they... And you give the dirty laundry. Guess what? She's not going to be very happy with them around. Right? That brings insecurity. She can't handle that. I can flush it. God has given me that grace. So, yep. Immoral infraction. And that's as far as it goes. We just need to pray for him, them, whatever, right? And so, you work it through, but you have to recognize and learn. Problem is, guys don't. And so, and then in fixing it, that would be part of it. You have to recount and remember and put some things in place. Yep. Good. Very good. Good questions, guys.